This is Focus West Michigan for Wednesday, April 22, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. Nonprofit senior living facilities play a critical role in caring for Michigan's aging population, but similar centers are taxed differently depending on location. As WGVU's Dee Morrison reports, lawmakers began looking at changing that on Tuesday.
Some municipalities were taxed on everything we operate, and other municipalities were taxed on nothing that we operate.
Adam Kinder, Chief Financial Officer of Holland Home, testified before the Michigan House Finance Committee as it considers addressing property tax policy for nonprofit continuing care retirement communities, or CCRCs. There are nearly 30 of them statewide, offering independent or assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing, serving thousands of seniors statewide.
If I were to pick up one of our campuses today, move it to another municipality, maybe I wouldn't have to pay property taxes at all, despite the fact I'm delivering the exact same care to the exact same people.
Kinder argues that inconsistent property tax assessments add financial strain for residents, many of whom live on fixed incomes. It also limits the ability of CCRCs to expand services and maintain affordable care options.
We're going to need to serve more people than we've ever served in our state's history. We're having to pause and think about, is this really the most cost-effective place for us to expand, knowing that we might be subjecting ourselves, also our residents, to significant costs as it pertains to property taxes.
The proposed legislation would clarify registered nonprofit CCRCs qualify for property tax exemptions, ensuring consistent treatment statewide. I'm Dee Morrison.
Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan is announcing the closure of one of its West Michigan service centers as it moves those employees to its downtown Grand Rapids headquarters. WGVU's David Limbaugh has the details.
As part of our ongoing commitment to fostering vibrant economic centers, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan will be relocating approximately 130 employees from our suburban Cascade Road office to our downtown Steckety's location.
President of West Michigan and Upper Peninsula Blue Cross Blue Shield, Joe Hune, says BCBS's Cascade Service Center is an underutilized facility. The move will make their occupancy at the Steckety building at capacity with just over 400 workers.
So we've certainly been on a very, very strong transformation process, and that's looking at our operations and trying to bring greater efficiency to our overall enterprise. That also includes real estate.
Grand Rapids Mayor David LeGrand says he appreciates BCBS's continued investment and worker retention in the city.
I say all the time that, we need more housing downtown, but we only need more housing downtown if we have more jobs downtown, because that's the synergy and that's the magic, I think, of downtown neighborhoods of the future.
BCBS has called the Steckety building home since 2004. Renovations begin in May, with employees moving in September. The Cascade Service Center will be put on the market in 2027. I'm David Limbaugh.
Ottawa County health officials are reporting their first case of measles in more than 30 years. The health department confirmed measles in an Ottawa County resident and is working to notify anyone who may have been exposed. There's no notice of any public exposure sites at this time, but as measles is highly contagious, residents are being urged to watch for symptoms such as high fever with cough, runny nose, and a red blotchy rash. If symptoms develop, call ahead before going to the doctor's office to allow staff to prevent further exposure. Everyone is encouraged to update vaccinations. You're invited to an all-day festival to celebrate the grand opening of the Acrisure Amphitheater in Grand Rapids. As WGVU's Dee Morrison reports, you can tour areas you might not otherwise get to see.
The city's riverfront is set to transform as Grand Action 2.0 hosts a free all-day community celebration, inviting West Michigan residents to explore the 12,000-capacity venue through a mix of live performances, art, and family activities, topped off with a drone show set to music.
The celebration is representing the incredible depth of talent we have here in West Michigan, and certainly putting that talent front and center in a venue that has been created for community is important to us.
Grand Action 2.0 Executive Director Kara Wood says musicians will perform all day on three stages inside the amphitheater and on a stage outside at a street party on Market Avenue.
The concessions at the venue will be open, but we wanted to provide the opportunity for local food trucks to be showcased in the venue because it does accommodate the use of food trucks.
The event is Saturday, May 16th. Starting at 11 a.m.
People can go to acrisureamphitheater.com to get tickets. They're not required for entry, but strongly recommended. And chairs are not allowed in the venue, but blankets are welcome. So we encourage folks to make a plan for parking and get online to get tickets.
I'm Dee Morrison.
The Kent County Parks Department is inviting the community to an open house to help make the Indian Mounds corridor safer, more welcoming, and better connected. WGVU's David Limbaugh has the details.
Indian Mounds Drive is a 4-mile road running parallel to the Grand River and I-196 from Market to Wilson Avenue. It shares a recreation lane stretching from the southwest side of Grand Rapids through Wyoming to Grandville. The road is connected to the Grand River Greenway, an emerging network of parks, trails, and natural areas linking West Michigan communities to the Grand River, running from Lowell to Lake Michigan. The Kent County Parks Department is hosting an open house for residents to obtain feedback on how to improve the road. The open house follows up on an online survey last fall that collected responses from nearly 2,000 community members across Kent County. The survey revealed several shared priorities, including safety, maintenance, ecological restoration, and care for sacred sites such as the Grand River Burial Mounds. Potential improvements will be on display at the open house for the community to see and discuss, with a planning study to be completed this summer. The open house happens Monday, April 27th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Kent County Parks Administration Building. I'm David Limbaugh.
Coming up soon, another edition of School News Network's Study Hall podcast, but first, news from around the state. Tuesday was the candidate filing deadline in Michigan. As Colin Jackson reports, businessman Perry Johnson is among the last candidates for governor to submit nominating petitions.
Johnson, a Republican, rolled up to the Michigan Bureau of Elections office in his signature campaign bus, blasting the campaign song he recently unveiled. Since jumping into the race in January, Johnson has polled near the front of the six-person field. That says Johnson has spent some of his personal fortune flooding the state with ads. He says more could come.
We spend what's necessary in order to win the election, and right now we have a lot of momentum, so you can see it wherever we go.
Other Republicans in the primary race include Congressman John James, Michigan Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt, and former Attorney General Mike Cox. I'm Colin Jackson in Lansing.
Detainees held a hunger strike this week at the North Lake Detention Center in Baldwin, the largest immigration detention center in Michigan. There were reports early Wednesday that the strike had ended in at least one unit after starting on Monday. The detainees are protesting long stays at the facility, slow communication from ICE, and some of the living conditions there. On Tuesday afternoon, around 30 people gathered in Baldwin to support the strike. Aaron Madden Reed of Ludington was there alongside others with drums and loudspeakers, hoping detainees could hear them. She said she talks with women detained at North Lake.
Everyone I have been speaking with has had a deportation order, but has still been held here for months and months and months and months. So, like, what are we doing?
According to Immigration and Customs Enforcement data from earlier this month, the average length of stay at North Lake is 49 days. ICE and GEO Group did not respond immediately to requests for comment. Some northern Michigan school districts have far exceeded their allotted snow days following a historic blizzard and record-breaking flooding. The Sheboygan School District has had 17 snow days this year and were off 3 days last week due to flooding. Michelle Chase is a fourth-grade teacher in Sheboygan. She says more school days creates extra costs for the district.
We have to have bus drivers, we have to have aides, we have to have kitchen staff. All of those hourly employees are an additional cost because those are extra hours above and beyond what was budgeted for.
Chase says she worries that the district won't meet attendance requirements for those extra days because seniors are gone and many students have summer jobs. Lawmakers in the State House are working to pass legislation that would forgive extra days for areas that experienced extreme weather this year, but Chase says that's no guarantee. Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support the show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. It seems like AI is suddenly everywhere, and that includes Kent County classrooms. Today on Study Hall from School News Network, two educators talk about how students are using AI tools to help them learn, not do their learning for them, and how teachers are employing AI to amplify their lessons while keeping cheating in check.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Study Hall from School News Network, your window into the public schools of Kent County, Michigan. Special welcome to our listeners at WGVU. We're here today to talk about AI, artificial intelligence, its positive uses and possible abuses in our schools. Most experts agree it offers powerful potential for teaching and learning, as well as problematic pitfalls. Here to provide some perspective are two Kent County educators on the leading edge of integrating AI into our classrooms. Aaron Romoslowski is Director of AI Strategy and Instructional Innovation for Forest Hills Public Schools and has been in the forefront of helping his district incorporate AI into classrooms. Michael Kennedy is Assistant Principal at Granville High School and has played a key role in Granville Public Schools' recent implementation of AI for all students and staff. Aaron and Michael, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm interested, Aaron, first of all, in why and how Forest Hills has incorporated into your classrooms. What did you see as the need to do this?
The need was presented to us when ChatGPT was released, and the fact that it's going to transform society. That need has been sustained and reinforced through activities that our students were seeing at colleges as early as in the spring semester of 2023, that there were certain collegiate classes that were requiring students to use this and creating, you know, before completely unthinkable projects that students wouldn't have ever been able to achieve, that now they were expecting them to be able to achieve. And then the workforce changes that are happening, maintaining that education, that AI literacy is something that is essential now for hires. And there's even research that suggests businesses are more likely to hire someone who is AI literate and fluent over someone who has more experience at the position. And so if we're not teaching our students about this, we're setting them up to be a pretty big strategic disadvantage, not only in their college, but then in their workplace as well.
So it was really, students cannot really afford to graduate without these skills at this point.
At this point, it's becoming essential that students have an awareness of the appropriate uses of AI.
Michael, is that pretty, does that resonate with what you're seeing in Granville?
Yeah, I think it's right on, hits the nail on the head.
So I think people are probably a little mystified, unless they're in education, as to how AI works in a classroom situation and situations where it might work well in a particular class or subject area. Mike, at Granville High School there, can you give me a couple ideas, a couple examples of where you see this working well?
Yeah, I can think of an English class in particular. This particular classroom has a number of multi-language learner students in it. And so when they are working on various assignments, projects, they use an AI translator to help them with some of the more nuanced words or parts of language. There's one student I'm blanking on where, but it was a fairly, you know, lesser known language than maybe Spanish or Swahili or, you know, Bosnian, which we have a lot of speakers, and was able to use that AI bot to kind of help navigate through and found themselves not falling behind, but able to keep up with, you know, people who'd spoken English their whole lives. So really cool example to sort of bridge that gap for that student. I'm seeing it in other places where teachers are using the AI bots to help foster feedback for students on their work, whether it's writing or various other parts of their project. Because what it does then is it allows the teacher to take time with those students who most desperately need that one-on-one teacher experience versus the student who would maybe take up the teacher's time, but can now actually get that same quick feedback from the AI bot instead of the teacher themselves. So it allows the teacher to go deeper with the students who have the greatest needs.
So do many of your teachers say this is kind of like having an assistant, that it does free them up in many ways from to do other things that they need to do as a teacher?
Yeah, I don't think they're quite ready to say that yet. I think they're starting to see, though, that this is exactly how AI can function best in schools as an assistant, whether it's helping craft a difficult email to a parent, whether it's designing a lesson where you've just kind of hit your creative wall, and I can't think of a thing that's going to help move the needle for students. I think they're starting to see that through their own experiences. They have yet to use that term with me or amongst each other, but I think we're getting there.
Yeah. So I think in public perception and probably maybe among many of your teachers and parents, the possibility of using AI to cheat, to let AI do the learning for you, I think is a widespread concern. So what policies do you have in place to control this cheating factor, and how do the students themselves feel about it, Michael?
So we wrote into our AI policy some very clear directives about what it is allowed for and what it is not allowed for. And one of the big not alloweds is it should not replace your thinking and learning. It is to come alongside. It can be a research assistant. It could be, you know, something you're using to get feedback on something, but it is not to replace your learning. We treat it just like any other academic dishonesty experience, right? Our student handbook has a very clear policy about that. We've actually doubled down. We have not only an academic integrity policy, but we also have an AI policy built into the student handbook that reiterates, if you're using this to think, there could be consequences for it, whether that's at the classroom level or at the building level. That could result in, you know, you have to redo the assignment. It could be, you know, all the way up to some level of suspension, maybe even losing credit for a course if you continue to allow this to think for you instead of you thinking.
Yeah, sort of like plagiarism, right, back in the day. Right?
And I think that's mostly where we see it is in terms of plagiarism.
Aaron, in Forest Hills, do you see any evidence of increased cheating because of AI?
I think we're seeing more of what was already happening in different ways.
Okay.
We've really encouraged staff to approach it as a citation issue. So if you use it in your paper and it's not cited, the same way that you would have talked to a student about citing Mice and Men, that you wouldn't take all of that essay or all of that novel and plugged it into your essay before, and you wouldn't have taken an essay from somebody's website and plugged it in as your own. Mm-hmm. You're not to do that with AI. And by approaching it as a citation issue, that further reinforces that there's times and places that it is appropriate and there's ways that it's not appropriate. And then it creates a conversation with the student about what are we actually dealing with here and how can we move on from it? So when, you know, Charlie comes up to Aaron and says, Aaron, can you tell me about paragraph 3? And Aaron's eyes get really big and he can't tell you anything about paragraph 3. Then there's a quick opportunity there to say, all right, Aaron, how about you grab a seat out in the hall for a couple minutes? I want you to rewrite this essay really quick, or give me an outline, or do X, Y, or Z that will show me that you have some mastery of this. And if you don't, it's a reteaching opportunity. And so, yes, much like Granville, we have an academic dishonesty policy. There's all sorts of steps and processes to that. We've woven in AI into that academic dishonesty policy by talking about it as citation. But the biggest piece that matters with each and every one of those instances is how are we teaching on the back?
Well, it sounds like in both districts, you're using AI as an enhancement of teaching and learning, certainly not a replacement for. And it's a fast-moving technology, and it's good to see that you're on top of it in your respective districts. Thanks to you both for talking with us about this really important subject. Thanks to our listeners for joining us at WGVU. To hear the full version of this podcast, go to schoolnewsnetwork.org and click on podcasts, or you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again, and until next time, happy studying.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Wednesday, April 22, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.